Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's changing world. Your host is Dane Groeneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Joining Dane is Karis Goodall, founder of The Goods. From supporting NASA's return to space to scaling mission-driven businesses, Karis brings a refreshingly human perspective on leadership, team building, and the evolving world of work. In this conversation, Karis shares how the skills often overlooked, like relationship building and adaptability, are becoming the real differentiators in a world where technology is leveling the playing field. You'll hear why the age of the generalist is finally having its moment, how organizations can unlock the hidden strengths of their people, and why middle managers hold the key to cultural transformation. Whether you're a leader navigating AI-driven change, a team builder looking for new ways to inspire, or just someone who loves a good story about blending purpose with performance, this episode is for you. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork. My name's Dane Groeneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Karis Goodall. Karis is the Chief Operating Officer at Vetster and also founder of The Goods. So we're going to be talking a lot today about technology, marketing communications, building teams, and just the way that the world is changing right now with this shift into AI. Welcome to the show, Karis.
Thanks so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Me too. I'm excited for the conversation. Pre-show, my energy levels just kept climbing, just hearing some of the things that are capturing your attention. Perhaps you could start by sharing with our listeners what it is, what your story is that's brought you to be working in this space.
I am what I call the unlikely COO. I've had a very checkered past, I would say. I actually started in public relations many, many moons ago. At a time where Canada's tech industry was really booming, it was sort of post-Nortel, lots of innovation happening here in Canada. And I was really fortunate. I got some amazing clients, one of which actually helped NASA return to space in 2005. Cool. So the Discovery's return to flight mission. There was a laser camera on the end of the Canadarm, which was going to scan the shuttle to make sure that it could return to Earth safely. And that was my client. It was a company called Neptech out of Ottawa, Canada, our nation's capital. And I was just at the right place in the right time, but worked on 14 shuttle missions and learned the power of communication, the power of doing your job with excellence. And moreover, I gained an experience that I wish every human being would have, which is the idea that you are working for something so much greater than yourself. Mm-hmm. And that parlayed me into seeking out mission-driven businesses. And so I worked for Kobo, which is a Kindle competitor, number two in the world. We scaled an e-reading company, helping people find, you know, the love of the written word from four countries when I joined to 22 by the time I left 3 years later. I joined League, a healthcare marketplace at the time, which was really driven around how can you get all of your healthcare providers into one app to change your life, that they can all work together. We all know the challenges of navigating health, particularly as we get older. Yeah. And then more recently have joined Vetster. And Vetster is a pet telemedicine platform. And so we are helping people take care of their pets and get access to veterinary care. And so I've morphed from public relations where I had a skeleton key into every part of the business. I could go speak to supply chain, figure out what they needed in the business, what was making them tick, what were the stories they wanted to tell, to HR, to finance. And that gave me a skill set that parlayed itself into being an operator, which doesn't seem like they're hugely connected, but seeing patterns, being proactive, mitigating crises, which all PR professionals are well adept to, we're sort of dialed in on that frequency all the time. But being able to really connect with your audience actually makes you a great operator because you can predict, you can connect with people, you can build a culture, that is really geared towards growth. And so while I don't have an MBA, I'm a university dropout, I'd like to joke, it's true. I've spent 25 years sort of honing a craft that is unconventional.
It's a wonderful story, and the craft that you share, I find it very captivating. I also find that it builds on a number of themes that we've seen in a number of these interviews and shows that we've run. Definitely themes around storytelling, a huge theme around curiosity. Yeah. And I think, we can talk about formal education and MBAs until we're all blue in the face, but the reality is what was the gold standard of how to run businesses is no longer. And so I think the power of curiosity and teams and leadership and product development and culture building is becoming more and more critical. So I think maybe one of the first kind of light bulb moments of this conversation is that listeners out there that are trying to build teams, they might want to go and look for some more PR professionals to bring that skill set to bear.
I'll certainly advocate for any PR professionals. But I think you hit on a really good point, which is, I think in today's day and age where technology is changing so fast, and we were chatting earlier about how technology is being democratized in the organization, creativity, communication, relationship building, critical thinking, those are going to be your secret weapons. Those will be how you evaluate your people. You will evaluate your people based on their ability to know, emulate, and live by your values far more than you're going to measure them of whether or not they can code a website, because now everybody's going to be able to do it.
Yes.
How people show up is going to be a huge competitive advantage.
Yeah, I think that's another very cool theme that I'm only just scratching the surface of with a few other guests, but it is that you'll hire more for the how we work, how we learn, how we operate versus the traditional technical skill sets, because those technical skill sets are being augmented, supplemented so much more so by the new tech stack.
I think it's going to be the age of the generalist.
Uh-huh.
Finally, yeah. We're going to get our moment in the spotlight, I think.
Yeah.
For so long, it's been hire specialists who are very good, who can help to scale your business in very specific ways. That's no longer going to be true. How can you show up and be multifaceted? How can you learn very quickly? How can you adapt to change? In the last 10 years, of course, with the pandemic, we've seen already a separation of that starting, where people who can hold that resilience are finding more success in their organizations. And the people who are struggling are the people who get a little bit more paralyzed in fear. With the changing world, and they need a lot of support in your organization, a lot more security. And I think that's our job as people leaders now, is to start to figure that out of where do we need to support people? How can we give them more stability in an ever-changing world? And then how do we also prep them for the future, which is going to, change will be the omni-constant here. And so it's exciting.
It's super exciting. And I liked the pre-show we were talking about that kind of Venn diagram of return to office, AI, the generational breadth of workforces and difference of workforces. And you talked about resilience, but there were a couple of other statements you made. You said having a greater sense of self, and you said having more emotional clarity, and both of which I think in the way you described them were helping move people beyond sort of fear-based decision-making into sort of belief and hope and mission focus. So perhaps you could expand on that.
Yeah. I think this is one of those learnings that do come with age a little bit. And if I could think of my 30-year-old self, my 35-year-old self, so many of the things that we do in the early days of our career, even though we don't know it at the time, are fear-based. You're climbing a corporate ladder. There's a fear of failure. There's a fear of doing something unconventional, going off the beaten path. Society is sort of telling you what the next step is. It usually comes with a title and a raise. And I think now, if I could have taught myself anything, it was relax a little, spend a little bit more time in self-reflection. When you are younger in your career, you have very little self-awareness, certainly of you and your role, but also of the role that you're playing within the business. You have all this hubris, all of this joie de vivre, and that's amazing. You've got all the bravery. But I think what we as the elders, I say sarcastically, but I think the gift that we can give to people as they're coming up is the ability to just take a little bit of air out of the balloon, let them find their center. And the best thing that we can do is really hone in. I call it the weird and the wonderful. Huh. What makes you weird and wonderful? What are the things that you're bringing to the table that I'm not going to see on your resume? Yeah. How are we going to celebrate those things? That's what I want to hire for. The resume I can teach. And if you can convey that to people, if you can really zero in on it, and I don't mean just in a one-on-one chat over coffee. I mean, make it part of their performance, their evaluation. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we really lean into this? How do we give you the space to find yourself outside of the day-to-day tasks? I think that is one of the greatest gifts that we can give people today. And I wish that I would have had that gift earlier on. You know, I'm lucky that I get to do it now, but.
Super lucky. And by the sounds of it, your team members are lucky that you're embracing it and championing it in your organizations too.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. We've, you know, our retention rate is really high, you know, here at Vetster. We're only 5 years old, but the majority of people have been here since the very beginning.
Awesome.
And we've really built this mosaic of people who come from all walks of life and backgrounds, and most of them didn't walk in with the perfect resume. You know, they just had an appetite and an aptitude. I've got somebody who works in our marketing team. She came from Big Brother, the show. Mm-hmm. And she happens to be Australian as well. Mm-hmm. We've got other people who have just put their hand up and said, I want to try this. I've never done it before. Maybe they came from sales, but now they're running our community of thousands of veterinarians. And so when you can find those little weird and wonderfuls in somebody and just flourish it and, you know, really water it and let it grow, you see amazing things from people.
I think so. And it's instinctively, it's taking me towards a place of belief, which is if I see that my boss, whether it's Karis or someone else, is actually shining a light on a team member for something that they do that's weird and wonderful. I love that construct. And actually helping them weave that into the fabric of the way they do their work, the way they engage with customers or other team members, then I feel encouraged to kind of take that self-reflection time and think about where my superpower or weird and wonderful capabilities may lie. And it feels like there's a little bit more, another big word that we've been talking about on the show lately is mattering. Like it matters how I work and the work that I do for my customers and my team members, rather than here's the rubric, this is what you've got to be working to in this role at this time in your career.
Yeah. I think the biggest group that falls into that trap is new VPs or new directors. You know, you've stepped into for the first time, and I was certainly guilty of it, and it was one of the things that I had to unpack for myself, but I see it regularly. You've got a little modicum of power and control that you've never had before. Yeah. You've got a perception of what you think people management is going to be. And it is categorically never what you thought it was going to be. But there's also a sort of sense of, well, now I'm here, I'm not an individual contributor. Now I'm here, it's about how I come forward as a leader. And then you're sort of in it and you get kicked around a bit and you realize it's completely the opposite. It is about your people. It is about how you're going to bring this whole picture together. And what I most often hear from VPs in frustration is, I wish I had a better team.
Yes.
If I had higher performers, I would therefore be higher performing. And what you realize is, oh, you've forgotten that part of this, nobody's ever shown you that part of this is actually to unpack who your people are and to provide true coaching. It's not about showing people what good looks like and hoping that they'll get there. You know, I often hear this from people. Well, I show them what good looks like and then they should be able to get there. And I said, sure, but you can show someone a picture of a house. It doesn't mean that they know how to cut the grass and install windows and do the plumbing. you really have to sit in, you know, with your people, hands on, coach them, be willing to do it more than once. I find new sort of leaders, they do this gauntlet throwing thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to rise to my challenge. That almost never works. And I put my hands up. I was very much guilty of this, you know, because when you are a high performer yourself, you have this expectation that you are charting a course so people will follow in naturally behind you. And what you don't realize is you turn around and, you know, they're drowning in the mud behind you. Yeah. They, you know, their shoelaces are untied. They're exhausted, you know, and they lack clarity. You know, I think there's so much work to be done in that space for our leaders. But again, if you can tie it into weird and wonderful, find their weird and wonderful, show up as your authentic self. There's so much magic to be had, and it's so much less stressful.
It's so cool. I'll have to get Alicia to include something on this in our show notes as it relates to this show method that I've been building off the back of many of these conversations on the Future of Teamwork podcast. But we came up with this method that we continue to explore and evolve. And it's an acronym. And the W of show is work. And that is that a leader needs to pick what work they're going to jump in the trenches and do with their team. So it sounds like your approach here is, hey, don't throw down the gauntlet. Actually get in there and work with them. Help find their weird and wonderful. Help show them how you do the work, but also learn how they do it. There's something there that seems very captivating.
Yeah, thank you. I think you've said it better than I could say it. I'm a pretty collaborative person. I like to be in it. I've never been super hierarchical in terms of, you know, oh, that's not my task. You know, funnily enough, PR teaches you this, you know, there's a spill on the floor at an event. Well, we better clean it up because the PR brain will tell you someone will slip. It will be front page news, you know, at your event. Yeah. That's not the headline that you want. You sort of get trained into always predicting the future and that, you know, any job is your job to complete. And so I take the same approach with leadership, people management. Let's be in this. Let's have fun. Let's collaborate. Let's ideate. You know, when you have, as I do, more than 25 years of history, there's just information sharing. I think often you can get your elbows up a little bit but I want to do it and I want to show that I'm capable. And if you can let that go and say, no, wait, we get to collaborate on this across all levels, senior, junior, from cross departments, that's where true magic really will happen. And I think that's the core of, you know, DEI principles that people sometimes forget. We get so wrapped up in the political nature of DEI conversations today, but we actually forget that what we're really saying is we want people to be able to come to the table authentically. Correct. We want to get the magic out of all of our people.
Correct. Yeah, I agree. I think sadly DEIB has received, going back to PR, a bad branding campaign. Mm. You know, it became all about visually what it looked like and not enough about what it actually feels like, what it actually means for the people doing the work. So people took their sides. But you're absolutely right. If we got back to the fact that what you said at the top of the show, people want to be attached to mission-driven work. People want to actually be able to bring their true self to work. And that's not, you know, to bring your whole self to work. It's your true self. It's how you like to work, how you like to learn, you know, where you collaborate. I think those things make a big difference. It actually leads me to my next question, which is on, it sounds like with League in healthcare and then with Vetster, you've built a couple of marketplaces, which always fascinate me because there's a lot of teaming that goes on across a marketplace in that ecosystem. And when I think about both of those environments, whether it's healthcare for us as humans or for our pets, it's super mission driven. And I would imagine that most people that are turning up to do that work really know what the impact is for the customers of doing the work well. What is it that happens to sort of be drawing you into those environments and what are you finding unique as you look at extending that outcome to customers?
Yes. It's funny here at Vetster on any given day, like today, there's about 15 dogs in the office.
Yeah.
And so it's chaos. but it's this sort of beautiful, passionate group of people who we are the customer. You know, we've come into it saying we just want pet care to be better. We're working with thousands of veterinarians across North America who are also in crisis. You know, it's a largely women dominated industry. About 86% of vets are women today. And that's a huge transformation in an industry which in the 1950s was mostly men. And so we've got a lot of things sort of swirling that for me personally, I can really love and attach. I can feel like I'm doing great by supporting women, particularly women who are running small businesses. I can feel really great about helping animals.
Yes.
You know, nobody could ever complain about that. But I also have a team here of 70 people who are showing up every day because of their own personal journeys and experiences and wanting to make that better. It really does go back to working with NASA. Very early on in my career, the idea of working for something bigger than yourself, you know, when I would see the photography that would come back from the International Space Station, from the astronauts, to really understand what a microcosm the Earth actually is in the grand scheme of things, to understand that in order to achieve those goals, everyone, in the words of Bridget Jones, I fannied about with press releases. Yeah. That was my job. You know, I wrote press releases, fairly inconsequential in the grand scheme of putting a man in space. But what I learned was that I needed to be excellent so that the person beside me could be excellent in their job, so that when the astronauts did the media interview, that they were well prepared, so that that interview helped to influence government decisions around funding, so that that funding got to the right suppliers in Canada to be able to participate with NASA, so that NASA could put these people in space. And I've taken that through, and I'd like to think that I've inspired some people here to feel that way, which is we are in a bigger mission-driven business, and we need to show up with purpose. We need to show up with clarity. It's now my job as a COO to make sure that you have the environment for that purpose and clarity to thrive. But I really did learn it working with NASA. Absolutely.
It actually reminds me of the Take Me to the Moon movie, too, where the Scarlett Johansson character is just
that's
like,
a great movie.
It's so good. You also remind me there, Karis, that it's not just the customers who have pets that get served in a marketplace like Vetster. It's the small business owners, the veterinarians themselves. Mm-hmm. From what little I know of that market, both as a pet owner who's had my own frustrations engaging in the right type of care, and just observing what's been happening in the private equity markets with a lot of roll-ups of veterinarian practices. What I understand there is that, you know, there's been roll-ups because there hasn't been succession plannings. Maybe some of those older male owners haven't been able to sell their businesses or make opportunities available for younger vets to be able to come through and buy businesses. And there's been this shift to tech. That the market seems to have sort of had a lot of shake-up here in North America from what I can observe. And I just wonder, when you talk about serving those 86% of women veterinarians, many of whom are small business owners, like how does that play out? How are you teaming up with that ecosystem of small businesses to bring, you know, the best of what they offer to your wider community?
It really comes down to a lot of similarities that we've seen around the gig economy and how that is changing things. And so Vetster, we don't hire the veterinarians. They are all independent in our marketplace. And so they are running not only a clinic, perhaps, they might be working at several clinics, and then Vetster is supplementary to that. Though we do also have some veterinarians who are now almost exclusively virtual. And when you think about women in the industry, exactly what you said is happening. Private equity is coming in, picking up these clinics. People are graduating. They don't have the money. The financial landscape for everybody has changed. Yeah. So taking on millions of dollars to open up a clinic or buy a clinic is really untenable. And in addition to that, if you're a woman who's going to have a family or perhaps taking care of aging parents now, the flexibility that you need, that's a really hard thing to achieve as a small business owner. You know, what do you do? Those are massive financial implications. So it's no surprise that we've got private equity coming in and sort of picking up, you know, some of the gaps. But I think that's also where technology can really come in. So we have, at VetServe, we have veterinarians who go on maternity leave, continue to practice virtually.
Cool.
We have people through the pandemic, they were traveling internationally to see their family. So we have people who are in India, but still able to help people here in Canada in particular, all through the pandemic. It's about more flexibility. And I think we have this idea, we're still tightly gripped, whether it's to the office and the 9-to-5 work culture, whether it's to the clinic itself. The clinic will never go away. We work in tandem with clinics. But everybody wants more flexibility now. Everyone wants the ability to make money in the way that they want to, in a way that lights their fire. I have one veterinarian that we're very close with. She works in clinic. She does weight loss and mobility clinics as well. And then she's on Vetster, in addition, on top of volunteering and all of these other amazing things. She's designed her life.
Yeah.
Before, if you were a vet, you were on your feet for 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, taking phone calls on your one day off. Not a lot of flexibility, not a lot of empowerment. And so now technology is coming in, us and others, to really transform an industry, you know, that I think when you need that flexibility, when you want to feel like you are the master of your own domain, of your day, it's a really inspiring thing to see. And the vets tell us, you know, we came in with an idea 5 years ago of how this might go. They tell us how they're using it. It's really inspiring.
That's the cool thing about these platforms too, is that, and again, I think it ties into the teaming, the role of sort of customer, provider, platform owner is very fluid. So you can learn from how people are operating on your platform, you know, what are the better ways to work? What are the better services to offer? And I think going back to your pre-show comment on, you know, technology creating more democratization, you know, all of a sudden people aren't just designing their lives. They're actually coming up with better ways to do things through this kind of community.
That's absolutely right. In pet care in particular, you would go to a vet once a year and hope that you don't have to go ever again. You know, you really don't. You don't want your animals to be sick. Well, now with telemedicine, you can get answers to your basic questions, the things that you might have been going to Google for, or worse yet, ignoring entirely. I have an 18-year-old cat. I really keep my fingers crossed, you know, that she'll shake off whatever sneezes, you know, are occurring. Whereas now I can hop on the phone and talk to a vet where if it wasn't an emergency, I probably wasn't going to go to the clinic. I didn't want to waste their time. I know they're busy. I might not be able to get in. You diminish the care or the severity of what you think is really going on. Now I don't have to do that. You know, now people don't have to do that. And we've seen the same thing in human healthcare. I always like to say more is more. If you go to a nutritionist, you're more likely to go to a personal trainer. If you go to a personal trainer, you're more likely to go to a chiropractor in addition to your, you know, regular physician.
Yes.
The same is true in pet care, where we're seeing people, I'll seek out a nutritionist for my animal on top of the vet care. You know, you might have multiple providers working with you for your animal, which is a really amazing thing.
It's super cool. And we all know how expensive it can get if you let something go too far and then you're in like reaction mode for an unwell pet. So getting ahead of the curve and looking at preventative health is really important.
Yes, if only we could convince everybody.
That's
it's true.
Going back to that design the life concept, you talked about some of your providers on platform being able to be with family in other parts of the world or still be flexible enough through maternity leave or looking after aged parents. I would imagine there was some homeschooling, you know, vets as well through that pandemic period that could keep it all going. I know pre-show we were talking about how product and engineering used to kind of be the center, the black box, and I guess the clinic in that sense was for many veterinarians. And as you talked about that democratization, you said the learning, the self-reflection, the design of how we're going to show up in life not only serves us, it serves others. Are there key stories there where you can see, you know, this is actually serving, you know, whether it's family members, community members, research, innovation? I'd be intrigued to know, like, what are you seeing by this gig economy approach to veterinary care and how's that shaping up?
I think it extends far into all facets now. veterinary care really was locked into the clinic for so long. Mm-hmm. And now what we see is people having multiple roles that they're playing. They're stepping further and further into different aspects of veterinary care. And so one of our vets is now able to travel to third world countries and continue to practice using telemedicine, being able to volunteer, something that previously would have been untenable unless you were going to shut your clinic for yes. 6 months. And so when you talk about an impact on community, we're creating a generation of people who are deeply vocational. They sign up to help animals. They are medical professionals. Mm-hmm. This really is something that they are here to serve their community. And so when you have people who are happier, where they're staying in their industry longer, where they have all of this knowledge that they can pay forward, this industry, it has huge rates of burnout. Yes. And so when you have people with a large attrition rate, where 10 years into their profession, they are changing, they might be leaving the veterinary profession entirely, or they're going into research or pharmacological studies, but most of them are leaving. They're saying, yeah. I'm going to raise my family. I'm going to get a completely different job. This is untenable. And I think this is where pushing technology, pushing choice into the far reaching ends of the industry. Now you have veterinary technicians who can also participate in this industry. It's not just yeah. the veterinarians. It's your clinic staff. It really does affect everybody. And as a result, it's affecting their families. As a result, it's affecting the organizations that they're involved with. As a result, they're providing more volunteering. They're in their communities. We see it all the time.
Yeah.
It's anecdotal for sure, but I see it every day where we're hearing these stories where people have more flexibility and therefore more time and energy to be able to give back.
I think the volunteering one, Karis, is a great catch as well, because you look at this loneliness epidemic that the U.S. Surgeon General's, you know, been communicating to us all about. You look at just the breakdown in, there was a great podcast that Professor Scott Galloway put out the other day called Losing Our Religion. And it was saying how few Americans in that particular case are going to churches. And it wasn't so much, you know, what's the right church, what's the right religion, but that was a place of gathering and community mm-hmm. connection, which is not quite the same now for as many people. And yet volunteering, there are so many opportunities and needs through great organizations, you know, in our local communities and in other communities. If people can have time to do that, I think it's there's a multiplier effect that comes from actually taking that time, you know, whether it's individually, whether it's with family and friends, kids, you name mm-hmm. it, there's a lot to be seen as far as value there.
Yeah, certainly my own volunteering is probably the best thing that I do. And it gives yeah. back exactly as you described, 10x back to me for anything that I could ever put into it. I work with a wonderful organization here in Toronto called RISE, and it helps entrepreneurs with mental health and addiction challenges develop their own businesses. Often a 9-to-5 job isn't tenable for people. And so how do we help you become an entrepreneur? How do we get you the funding? How do we give you the mentorship? And it truly is amazing. And it is one of the best things that I do. And I say that not because I'm doing it. I say it because it gives me back 10x what I could ever put into it. And yeah. I encourage people. My father is a doctor. My mom is a nurse. And so being in the community and serving your community was certainly something I was raised with. You know, they both, medical profession is their vocation. They are always helping. And I've really taken that as a teaching from them. Always volunteering. And to your point, it doesn't have to be a big commitment. It can be an hour or two here or there. It can be something that lights your fire or something that is curious to you. It could be helping a friend, an entrepreneur in their business. Something completely different, cutting your neighbor's grass.
Yep.
But I agree with you. I think we've lost a little bit of that. And I think businesses are trying to, in some of the return to work, capture that.
Yeah.
I think it's the wrong place to capture that. I think there's a certain element of camaraderie that every business needs and that a business can provide to people who might be working at home alone more regularly. But I think being out in your community outside of the four walls of work, you get inspired, you get more creative. You realize that your purpose is to be part of a bigger thing than yourself, yes. which is a bit of a running theme with me. I think tapping into things that are bigger than you it generates and fosters a humility in you. It challenges you in new ways to get out of your own paradigm, which ultimately most businesses will operate within. You'll have your values. It's a pretty set paradigm. And if you're successful and you like where you work, it's a fairly stringent road that you're, yeah, or a narrow road that you're on. But once you get out into volunteering, once you get out into your community, all of those sort of reins, as it were, they fall by the wayside. Yeah. And suddenly now you are challenged in new ways, and you're in a completely different mindset that if you bring back to your work, to your family, I think is really powerful.
I think it is. And you're right. It can be done in small doses. I do think some corporations fell foul of the whole ESG movement. And, we do volunteering just to say we're a good company. And that wasn't necessarily always harnessed or pointed in the right direction for the people or the organizations in the community. So, this opportunity to create, design, gig economy type work, or even just a more open approach to how you work in more traditional organizations, I think it's nice to be able to give people that agency, that freedom to go and do the volunteering. I loved your comment earlier too on letting a little air out of the balloon, because when the balloon's at full tilt, like, it's hard to even think that you've got time to go and do an hour or two in the community.
Absolutely.
Once you take a little of that air out, you've got a moment not only to go do it, but then to see the energy that it brings back to you the next day that you show up at work or wherever else it might be.
Yeah. We should celebrate thinking more.
Yes.
We're so back to back in meetings and decisions and, all of the mental load that comes with our lives and our jobs. But we don't actually celebrate somebody saying, I'm just going to sit for an hour and ruminate. Because we can't imagine it. We can't measure it. We don't see it. And so, is that productive work?
Yeah.
Brainwaves and ideation and innovation will only ever happen in the quiet times. And yet we don't structure work in our ability to foster that.
No, we don't. And I think the culture, particularly here in North America since the dot-com days, has been ideas need to lead to outcomes, new products, new customers. We're actually... ideas just need to lead to other ideas and to connection and to trust. And the outcomes will come in time. And I just don't think, to your point, we have made enough time, space, or even celebration, for that matter, in many of our organizations.
We're so focused on scaling process, scaling up, growing our numbers. Of course, we all need to do those things. But we're not scaling our culture in a way that we're scaling relationships.
Yeah.
We're not focused on that sort of fabric that really is underpinning the business success. And I think that's where a lot of businesses get into trouble, is that the scaling of the numbers starts to become really disconnected from the scaling of culture.
Yeah.
That's where you see a lot of businesses falter. Things get stressful. That's where you start to see turnover. And it's difficult. Let's be very real. None of this is easy. It's very easy to talk about. It is not easy to do in practice. You've got a number of people who will all be bringing their weird and wonderful and their opinions and, their tension points to the table, and trying to navigate it and mold it. I sort of use the analogy that my job is to keep, thousands of marbles on a table sort of going all in the same direction, and catching the ones from falling off the table and, the ones who are trying to go backwards. No, we got to keep going. And it's chaos. It's a beautiful, wonderful chaos every single day. But if you're that individual marble that I'm wrapping my arms around, you might not like that sometimes, or sometimes you do, and sometimes what I'm doing is working for you and other times it's not, and you're constantly getting feedback. None of this is easy, and we want to pretend that it is. And I think we all need to just give ourselves a lot of grace and give each other a lot of grace every day to just say, it's okay, we're going to get there.
Yeah. And that actually goes, going back to the psychological safety and moving away from that fear-based decision-making, goes a long way. The it's okay, how might we approach this differently based on the learning here? Those types of questions, creating that space, I think is so powerful. And it's not the way many of us grew up. You were sharing, Karis, before the show, like, many of us with boomer parents were just told to, like, be quiet, grind your teeth, just get through the work, you know, don't make too much noise. We're actually, sometimes the noise is exactly what teams need so that it gives them that data point, that moment to reflect and maybe consider a new idea or a new approach.
Yeah, and I love what you just said, which is how might we?
Yeah.
My team here is absolutely sick of me saying it, but I always say it's not yes, it's not no, it's how might we? How might we approach this? How might we think differently? Throw the rule book out just a little bit. But to your point, if you're a Gen Xer, you really do. We are now in the place of having the most influence on somebody else's career.
Yep.
And we come with a lot of attitudes and preconceived notions and rules around grind it out, show up, make sure you know who your boss is, be visible. But that you are there to work and to continue working, and working is the measurement of success. And I certainly work that way. I love the grind.
Yeah.
And I'm aware that I have been taught to love the grind, but I try to be really conscious that I don't necessarily want that for the people around me.
Yeah.
That even if I am doing the grind, and you mentioned this early on, is sometimes we're not the best examples, and that we really do have to make space for people to say, you know, do as I say, not as I do in this one.
Yeah.
Because I do like the work, and my reward system is based on that gold star at the end of the day for doing the work. I do want to create different gold stars for other people.
Yes.
I share with my team, you know, I hope you have a side hustle. I hope you have a passion project. I want you to design your life.
Yeah.
I had somebody walk into my office the other day and said, you know, I'm really good where I am. I don't actually want to strive right now for the next thing, the next title. I like my life. I've got a good balance. They have a side hustle, which I'm really excited about for them. I'm good. And they were saying it to me as if that was failure or as if I was going to be disappointed. I was just exalted. I mean, I couldn't celebrate this person more. You know what you want. You're slowing down your life right now. It's exactly, this is you designing your life, and I am here to support you in that. I tell my team at Vetster, I hope you're here for as long as you want to be.
Yes.
My job is to help you while you are here to get all of the skills and the adventures for the next thing you're going to do. And in exchange, I'm going to ask you for some work.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pay you for that work, and I'm going to ask you for those things. That's the exchange. But really, I think we need to hold employers more accountable to, it's not being locked into this company forever. It's about, you need to give me the experiences for my next thing.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a good
trade. In exchange, I'm going to work really hard.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to earn my keep here. And I think we need to reframe that relationship.
I think we do. And it's a good call out. I think it's interesting earlier, you were pinpointing new VPs and new directors. And I think in most organizations that want to kind of bring these changes, starting with the CEO or the COO isn't necessarily the best spot, because as you've just shared, and as I've found in my own time, a lot of us are in a pressure cooker, or we've learned a way and we enjoy a particular way of behaving. But actually that VP director level is so critical as like a catalyst for change in organizations. And it made me think just some of these points that you've touched on of a conversation I had recently with a fellow Canadian, Sabina Nawaz. She wrote the book, You're the Boss. And she talked about power and pressure. And she said, the problem is when you're under the pressure of a new product launch or a new role, and you've got power because you're now in a new position, this combination of pressure and power means that the team members don't necessarily tell you what's not working.
Mm-hmm.
It means that you're putting yourself under a huge, huge kind of bar of performance, which isn't realistic. You're not being curious. You're not going to some of those activities that we talked about earlier. And the way she described it is like that you've got a broken power, volume knob from this power and pressure combination. So it seems like a lot of what you're sharing here, Karis, is addressing just that dynamic, which is, well, let's get in there, let's create a bit of space, take the air out of the balloon, explore the weird and wonderfuls, really think about the mission, And then we can actually allow those newer leaders, those VPs and directors, to create healthier conditions for doing the work, but also designing the life, being the people we want to be.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better, really and truly. I think you need an awareness at your executive level that this is important, and you also need them to get out of the way.
Getting out of the way is huge.
Yeah, I have to remind myself on occasion, get out of the way. These people are amazing and they're more than capable, which is really difficult for a collaborator.
Yes.
And so sometimes my team, has to tell me, please get out of the way. And that's fair. That's fair. And I appreciate the two-way dialogue. But I agree with you. I think that middle management layer where you are managing up and managing down, if that balloon is full to the max, if you've got this power, and this pressure happening, if you're new, you hear all the time, oh, I need to get a win.
Yes.
As soon as I hear that, I think, oh, well, we're not set up for success here. Because now you are asking your team to make you look good.
Yeah.
You're in that mind frame that everything is going to have to be perfect. And so the minute I hear that, that's where, okay, let's reframe. Let's really think about what we're trying to do here, which I think is really important, as you described.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to do your best work if all you're doing is showing up for somebody else and the perception that person is going to have of you.
Yeah.
It's the wrong metric.
That's a great, just to play that back as well. I need to get a win in my first 60 to 90 days. Most leaders of the old school mentality, myself included, would have said, that's awesome. I love my new directors coming in knowing that. But actually, when you put it in the context that you have, that's not the best way to get the most out of the team. And you said it earlier as well, those new leaders will say, I wish I had a better team. Mm-hmm. They've got to go get curious about what the team holds and what the team's excited about doing. And that may create the collective wins and the sustainable wins too.
You can't recognize your own team if you yourself are fearful of success. If you're constantly striving and you're sort of living in your own head, that's fear-based, and I spent a lot of my early career fear-based, and you don't know that it's fear. You actually think it's success. You think it's achieving, you think it's striving.
Yeah.
And then you realize you had this imaginary dog barking at your heels, chasing you this whole time. It wasn't going towards something. It was going away from something. And if we can start to, encourage a new generation of leaders to unpack that, to give themselves more grace, to just take it down a notch, they're going to be able to help every level of the organization, which is ultimately what you want.
Yeah. And the community. I think it totally flows to the community. Well, it's been a wonderful conversation, Karis. I love the way your story kind of started out in PR and that curiosity and risk mitigation, as you shared, looking ahead at what we might need to do to stay ahead, moved you into the NASA mission and now onto League and Vetster. And I think a lot of what you share today is very powerful, not just for HR professionals and leaders, but also just for any executive or middle manager that's thinking, how are we going to shift that balance and really create healthier and more productive groups of people. So I appreciate you making the time. And if any of our listeners want to find you, connect with you or any of the causes, including RISE up there in Toronto, where do they best seek you out?
LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. It's my only social media at the moment.
It's a good one. Well, I'll make sure Alicia adds that to the show notes. And I look forward to staying connected and looking
Likewise.
At how some of these dynamics keep playing out in the future of teamwork.
Wonderful. This is a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,